You know, as Eric said, the one thing that we're assured of in this life is that we will be knocked down. And if we want to get to the place where we begin to experience the impossible, experience things that currently don't seem possible, we've got to learn how to get up when we get knocked down. You may have taken a lot of hits in 2016. You may have given a lot of hits in 2016, but the longer you live, you realize the importance of this. You're going to get knocked down, and you've got to get back up. So we're gonna begin to work on this today. And so let me pray for us before we start that. God, I just thank you for every single person that's gathered in this dark room this morning, every person that's tuned in online through the podcast, and that you have given us an environment to grow. I pray that when we leave here today, that we would be different as a result of our time here. God, I pray that you would just help us to, I think as we already have, get a real strong sense of your presence here today. And God, that you would help us to have a sense of who we are in light of you as well. God, I just pray that you help my words to be helpful today, help them to be beneficial, and just grow us, God, we pray. I pray these things according to your name, your identity, your character. Amen. Well, it's great to see you here this morning. My name's Kurt, if we haven't had the chance to meet. And man, we realize there's so many places you could be on a Sunday morning, and we just always get excited, especially if you're here for the first time, so welcome. You know, as we look across our culture, you know, I'm always fascinated with millennials, and I do a lot of reading on millennials, and as we look at the millennial generation, you have to understand something about them, whether you're in the generation or not, is that, you know, this generation represents all of America. In fact, you know, whatever the kind of up-and-coming generation is in any culture, it's kind of the bellwether of what that generation is becoming. It's the best description of what's going on in that culture. And so those of you who are in the millennial generation, there appears to be issues that you're dealing with that are going on in your lives, but in a real sense, these are being reflected in all of our lives. And, you know, in fact, a lot of us, you know, did not like the way the presidential election fared. And a lot of people are dealing with that, as we've been seeing over the last few weeks and months, in very different ways. And in fact, you had Ivy League schools. I don't know if you saw this a few months ago. You had Ivy League schools like Yale, like people who really value education, who after, you know, the election said, hey, you know, if you feel like you can't take the midterm today, you know, because you're so distraught over where our country is, it's okay. It's okay. It's like, really? I mean, in fact, instead of Yale, one unnamed educator said he ultimately chose to give his economics class the option to skip their test so they could cope with the fact that Donald Trump is their new president-elect. I'm like, really? I should have gone to Yale. I mean, that's my kind of school. Therapy dogs in elementary schools to help school children cope with election results. Colleges, get this, colleges providing cry-ins, according to the Wall Street Journal, and handing out Play-Doh to help college students deal with their emotional distraughtness. I mean, seriously, it's like, friends, this is a sign. This is a sign that our culture, whatever age you are, that our culture is not resilient. That when things don't go our way, we just kind of melt down, which unfortunately is why, you know, suicide is the number one death among teenagers today. In fact, take a look at these statistics from the state of Indiana. You know, suicide's the second leading cause of death among Indiana youth 15 to 24. 19% of Indiana students, by the way, highest in the country here in Indiana, have considered suicide. 14% of high school students have a plan for how they'd walk it out. 11% of Indiana youth, second highest in the country, have attempted suicide. Because we can't, I mean, there's other reasons here, but we can't handle pressure. In fact, Time Magazine had a whole issue this past fall on, you know, if you're a millennial, you know, this is kind of the way it is for you, who just this crushing emotional weight that you carry through life. It was fascinating. Here's what they said. They said, they are the first post-9/11 generation raised in an era of economic and national security. They've never known a time when terrorism and school shootings weren't the norm. See, I remember when terrorism became a thing. I remember 9/11 when all of a sudden everything changed. See, millennials today don't really have any sense of being aware of anything other than what we have today. It says they grew up watching their parents weather a severe recession. They looked into the eyes of their parents facing recession. They looked into their eyes and they saw the fear, and they saw how a lot of insecurity. We don't know if we're going to last. And this is perhaps most important, they hit puberty at a time when technology and social media were transforming society. And you know, we've all made mistakes, right? I mean, every single one of us, we've made mistakes. We made mistakes that we, you know, have ongoing consequences. But see, if you're younger, that means all of your friends are much more involved in social media than those of us who are older. And so your mistakes, if you're younger, they may be memorialized forever. Right? That's some of the weight that the millennials feel. I mean, their mistakes posted online might be there forever and ever to be accessed digitally. In fact, one researcher from Cornell said, if you wanted to create an environment to churn out really angsty people, we've done it. We've done it. Right? See, we live in a culture where if something is going on that isn't good, well, man, that just must mean God isn't real. Now, I don't believe that, but that's what so many in our culture feel. So today, I want us to do a deep dive on this figure, a guy by the name of Joseph. And we're going to look at him for the rest of today. And Joseph is not of the Mary Joseph duo that we celebrate at Christmas. All right, now, not that Joseph. We're looking at a guy that lived way before Mary and Joseph, all the way back at the beginning of the Old Testament, back in Genesis 37 through 50. That's where you can read Joseph's story if you want to, you know, kind of dive into his story this week. And you can go to the app as well, and you'll pick up in Genesis 37. And I want to kind of do a macro view of him today, and I want us to see how Joseph was constantly kind of on the knife's edge between living this arrogant life and living a life of humility. And here's what I want us to see in this. I want us to see that the more arrogant that you are, the less resilient you're going to be. And the more humility that you have, the more resilient you're going to be. And so Joseph has a number of things going on in his life that, you know, definitely are going to grow a sense of arrogance, a sense of pridefulness. And so let's take a look at his story in Genesis 37. Joseph has a bunch of brothers, and his brothers really can't stand him at all. All right, so let's find out why. It tells us right here. Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. This, friends, is what we call a tattletale, all right? I mean, this is a tattletale, and nobody likes tattletales, right? Why don't we like tattletales? Because they're arrogant, right? A tattletale is like, oh, let me point out to everybody what you just did, right? Even though I may have done the very same thing, let me point out to everybody how bad you are. I mean, tattletales like get under our skin, right? I mean, they just bother us. So he's got that going on for him. Verse 3, it says, now Israel, which is his father, now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was the son of his old age, and he made him a robe of many colors. So his dad's also not helping him out much. It says right there that Joseph's dad views Joseph as his favorite child. Now, if you're a younger child, you're going, no, that can't be. Parents don't have favorites. That's probably because you weren't one, all right? That's why you feel that way, because you probably weren't the favorite. Everybody knows parents, you know, kind of favor, you know, one child over others, right? The problem is when you talk about it, right? When you actually, you know, like, verbalize it, which is what Israel does right here. It says, Joseph's dad, Israel, that's his name, he says he loved Joseph more than any of his other sons. And so what does he do? He gives him this coat that has many colors. Now, this is really a big deal. And you might think, well, what's the big deal? We have all kinds of colors today. Well, see, back in this day, you didn't have many colors. I mean, you basically had white, off-white, and taupe. All right, that was your options. And so, like, to have something that has green pigment in it or purple pigment in it, this is very extravagant. And so Joseph gets this coat, and he's kind of out strutting it around, you know, broadcasting to everybody, Dad loves me more, you're a loser, I'm not, I'm special. You know, Dad loves me the most. And he's strutting this around, and as a result of this, pride and arrogance, you know, are a dominant thing that he's exhibiting in his life, and he's beginning to get knocked down by his brothers. Right? And things are beginning to come his way that are not good. And so there's a number of things that happen. You know, kind of the climax of the story with his family is his brothers sell him into slavery. They actually sell him. We like threatened our brother, we're going to sell you one day, you know, but it never happened. They do it. You know, and it's not just the coat that he's flaunting. It's not just that he's a tattletale. It's that he's always touting his specialness. Oh, I'm so much more important. And see, he has unique gifts. I mean, he has gifts. Like, he has these dreams where he hears from God. And he has this ability to interpret them and do things that nobody else can do, at least around him. And he has to make sure everybody knows it. In fact, take a look at Genesis 37:5. It says, now Joseph had a dream, and when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. And this kind of thing happens on a couple different occasions where he's basically like, hey guys, guess what? I had this dream, this really, really cool dream. And there's these like sheaves of wheat, and they were so tall. And guess what? That was me. And then there's these other sheaves, and they were like really, really small. And they were actually bowing down to the big sheaf. And guess what? That was you. How awesome is that? You're bowing down to me. Isn't that so cool? So like you can see as like a little kid, you know, how he's like getting under your skin, right? And then here's what it says next. It says, they said to one another, here comes this dreamer. Come on now, let's kill him and throw him into one of the pits. And so Joseph's pridefulness actually invites pain and difficulty into his life. And they're like, let's just throw him in a pit, leave him for dead. And then somebody, one of the brothers says, oh no, let's not do that. Let's like make a profit off this. Let's like sell him. Let's sell him as a slave. And so we see Joseph having major, major, you know, pride early in his life. But one of the things we see is this begins to mesh into humility. And Joseph's a resilient guy. He keeps getting knocked down, but he gets right back up. I mean, he's been abandoned and betrayed by his brothers. He's been thrown into a pit and then sold. Right? He's been physically abused. He's been thrown into a deep well and left there for a period of time before they decided to sell him. He's sold into slavery, and so he's in a place where people he doesn't know. He actually begins to work his way up in the home that he's working in, and then he's falsely accused of being a sexual predator. And nonetheless, even though it's a false accusation, he goes to jail. And then when he gets out of jail, he's in a foreign place with nobody he knows, no family, nothing. And yet what makes Joseph so great is that this is a guy who continues to get knocked down, but he gets back up. He gets back up. And this is the story of his life. He gets knocked down and he gets back up every single time. Oh man, how cool is that? I heard like the 10 guys who were Punch-Out fans, you know, on the original Nintendo right there. You know, but that's Rocky, right? Rocky bringing the heat, and he gets back up every single time. Every single time. First main idea today, pride makes hardship terminal, but humility makes hardship momentary. See, when you're prideful, you can't take a hit. Because when you're prideful, you get knocked down and your world crumbles. You're like, oh my word, what just happened? When you're prideful, you know, you think I'm the smartest person in the room. You think, man, nobody's smarter than me. And so when things don't go the way you plan, all of a sudden it blows your world out of the water. You're like, oh my word, maybe I'm not the smartest person in the world. Or maybe you think that, you know, if you're prideful, that I've just got God's sweet magic on my life all the time. And, you know, and so when something really difficult happens, whatever it is, you're devastated. You're devastated because you can't believe God would let this happen to you. How could God let this happen to me? Because, I mean, after all, I'm the center of everything, right? See, when you're the center of everything, you know, you can't realize that maybe God has more important things going on in the world than just what's going on in your life. On the other hand, when you're humble, when you're humble, you get knocked down and you get back up. You get knocked down and you get back up because you realize, man, that this thing, whatever happened, isn't like an end game thing. All right, this isn't like, it's kind of like, okay, that hurt. Put me on my back for a while, okay. But in my like 75, 80 years here on earth, you know, I'm not God's only issue. I mean, God's dealing with billions of people across the world. He's got problems way bigger than mine, and you bounce back personally because you don't take it personal. You know, it's pretty crazy as I was thinking this week about all the people I know here at Crosspoint and then beyond Crosspoint, just people I know who you know, I tell you what, they have taken some punches. And I can take a punch. I mean, I've taken my share, you know, fair share of punches in my life. But some of the things people have shared with me, some of the things I've seen recently on Facebook, even some of the conversations I had this morning, people who are fighting, man, they're getting up. They're not letting something keep them down. It blows me away, some of the difficult issues that people deal with, and they just keep getting up, keep getting up. And one of the things I've discovered over time is that, you know, when I get knocked down physically, like, that has some pain in it. But, man, when you take an emotional punch, I mean, that's way more difficult to get over. In fact, remember that old line as kids, you know, something like this, when, like, sticks and stones will break my bones, but it's like, who made that up? Who in the world? Like, that's stupid, right? There's no truth to that. In fact, I was Facebooking with an old friend of mine this past week who was a kid in our student ministry when I first was in student ministry up in Anderson, and basically his mom brought him to our church. They had just moved to the United States from China and knew very little English, and she brought him and said, hey, I work all the time in very broken English. He needs a place to go after school. This looks like a good place. So we kind of took him in. He started getting involved in some of our student ministry stuff, and I'll never forget being on a retreat with him. As he was in a junior higher still, and we were in the boys' bunkhouse. I think we were getting ready to go skiing. We were changing for getting ready to go skiing, and he took his shirt off, and on his shoulder there was like a scar. I thought, man, it looks like he had a surgery right there, because I've had a couple scopes on my shoulder, and I said, man, it looks like dude, what's up with the scar? I said, oh, that's when I got shot in New York City. Like, what do you mean you got shot in New York City? So yeah, we when we first got in the United States, we didn't have a home, so we were living in McDonald's in New York, and I flipped a guy off on the corner. He turned around, shot me, and then took off. I'm like, oh my words! I'm like, well, tell me about this. And he just moved on. I'm like, man, talk about getting up, you know, getting knocked down and getting back up. But then, as I later came to find out that his dad saved and saved and brought he and his mom over to the United States from China, got them through an immigration in New York City, and then disappeared for like years. Like he never saw his dad. He eventually got reconnected with him years later. But you want to talk about something that emotionally will put you on your back? That was way more difficult, way more difficult. But I've always been impressed by Dennis. I mean, if you talk about resilience, I mean, he's a kid that just got knocked down, got back up, knocked down, back up. I mean, he's very successful in business now, lives out in Texas. I had the chance to perform his wedding a few years ago. He's had a beautiful baby girl, he and Eileen, his wife. Look at that. I mean, here's a dude who had just decided, yeah, I'm going to take some bruises. I'm going to take some bruises, but you know what? I've got to work to make sure, out of humility, that those don't define me. Those don't define me. Genesis 39:2 says, the Lord was with Joseph, and he became a successful man, and he was in the house of his Egyptian master. His master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord caused all that he did to succeed in his hands. So Joseph found favor in his sight and attended him, and he made him overseer of his house and put him in charge of all that he had. So while Joseph is still prideful, he's being used by God. See, here's the thing. You can be prideful and not even know it. You can be a very moral person and still be prideful. You can be a very gifted person and be very, very prideful. All right, God can be using you, and you can be very, very prideful. And the way you know if this is an issue is when you take a hit, does it devastate you? Do you take it personally, or do you get back up? Because if you take it personally, then you're probably prideful. You're like, oh, that just damaged the core of who I am because I'm better than that. Do you stay down or do you go, oh, man, that hurt, but I got to keep going? Now, Joseph's master kind of elevates him to a higher place in his home. And we're going to look at this a little bit next week. We're actually going to do a two-week deep dive on Joseph here. We're going to look at the next part of his story next week. But basically, his master elevates him in his house, and he takes on a role, and then he gets accused of being a sexual predator, sexual assault, which isn't true, but he's thrown into prison. And while he's in prison, he has two other guys who were thrown into prison from Pharaoh's house, and they begin having these dreams, the baker and the cupbearer. They begin having these dreams, and Joseph, he understands a thing or two about dreams. I mean, he's really good at having them, and he's even better at interpreting them. And again, I'm not talking the kind of dreams where, like, I had pizza last night, and so my brain's doing weird stuff, you know, while I sleep. I'm talking like God speaking to you while you're sleeping. And so here's what it says. It says, they said to him, we have had dreams, and there was no one to interpret them. And Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. I mean, can you see the pride right here? He's like, hey, doesn't this belong to God? Isn't God the one? Go ahead and tell it to me. I mean, God and I, we're like the same. Whatever God's thinking, I already know because God and I are one. I mean, the dude is like arrogant. He's all prideful. And he goes to the cupbearer and he said, basically, dude, here's the deal. Here's the deal. You're the cupbearer, and now you're in prison, and I know your head is low right now. Your head is bowed because you're ashamed, but lift that head, that head up. Good days are coming. All right, you're going to return to being the cupbearer of the king. All right, that's what's going to happen to you. And then he goes to the baker, and he's like, on the other hand, baker, your head's coming off. All right, so there's not good days coming for you. And that's basically what happens. And so, you know, the cupbearer eventually, not long after that, makes his way back into Pharaoh's house. He gets rehired into the house, and he's now interacting personally with Pharaoh, and Pharaoh begins to have these weird dreams. And so he calls in all the magicians and the soothsayers and the Dungeons and Dragons players and the, you know, tarot card readers. I mean, all the spiritual people to try to interpret the dream, and nobody can do it. Nobody can nail it. And the cupbearer goes, hey, you know what? There was a guy I was in prison with like years ago. In fact, he's probably still there. And I tell you what, there were two of us. And we had dreams, and man, he nailed both of them. So Pharaoh hears this. He goes, okay, bring him up here. And so here comes Joseph emerging out of prison back into Pharaoh's home. And because Joseph has learned when he gets knocked down, he gets right back up. And so he's getting another shot right here. Check this out. One chapter later, Genesis 41. It says, Joseph answered Pharaoh, it is not in me. God will give Pharaoh a favorable answer. See the difference right here? All of a sudden, he's gone from a, hey, tell it to me, to, hey, this is way beyond me. This is God. God. You know, God knows. I don't know. See, there's a shift from pridefulness to humility happening right here. And this is one of the shifts for every single person who wants to achieve what seems impossible right now. There's got to be a shift from pridefulness to humility. Second thing, pride drives us to be about ourselves. Humility drives us to be about others. So pride says, you just look at yourself and look, dig deep, and you'll find all the answers. You know, just dig deep. All the answers are deep inside of you. Or, you know, just be about yourself. Don't get outside of yourself at all. Don't do things for others. Take care of yourself first. And I mean, go on a personal retreat and find yourself. That's fine. There's nothing wrong with personal retreat. It's just that if the only place I'm looking, you know, is inside myself, that's going to be very, very limited. In fact, and on the other hand, what humility says is, I don't have it all. I don't have everything I need. I've got to go outside of myself to actually get help. In fact, Proverbs 13:10 puts it this way. It says, where there is strife, there is pride, but wisdom is found in those who take advice. And so this is saying the humble are able to take advice, but the prideful, they never take advice. You know, one of the more bothersome things I hear every now and then is somebody will say, they say, well, everything I need, I've got right deep inside. I just need to dig it out. I've got everything I need. And I'm like, really? And you must not need very much. And I think that's, you know, if you think you have everything you need, you must have never needed very much in your life. And because we don't have everything we need. I mean, only the proud would say, I have everything I need. And those people who believe that, man, they're going to get smacked down someday. They're going to get knocked down, and they won't know how to deal with it. We've got to be able to accept help. We've got to be able to accept advice. You've heard us talking over these last few weeks. You know, Eric's been championing some of our community groups, and I've been championing community groups, you know, things like financial peace. And you know, why do you think we're encouraging you to get in financial peace? And it's not for everybody, But we realize that, you know, there's a lot of us that we're struggling financially. You might be making a lot, but your margin is very thin and you have a lot of financial pressure. Listen, we're not trying to build a class or fill a class. We tout these things because these things help us do what currently seems impossible. I mean, if you're thinking, man, I need a little more financial margin, or I need to get out of the debt that I'm in, or I just need to be a better manager, I need to be more effective with my money. Listen, you get into Financial Peace University. It starts next week. I mean, if you're in debt and you're thinking, I don't know that I'll ever be out of the revolving debt that I'm in, it just keeps snowballing and snowballing, that's a very difficult place, and I know it because I've been there. I get it. I get it. I get that there's probably not many more things at the same time more humbling than signing up on the back of a card for Financial Peace saying, hey, I need to join this class, or getting in the app and, you know, sign up for the class. There's nothing more humbling than saying, you know what, I have some problems here and I need some help from the outside. And I know that because Julie and I did that. I mean, 7 years ago, we made a call. We didn't have a class at the time. We made a call to a financial counselor and we said, man, we need some help. I mean, we had, for like 3 years, I just kept telling myself, Kurt, just dig deep, man. You got all this inside of you. You just got to figure this out. You got to figure out how to make the right decisions, get on the right pathway. And I did a lot of self-help things. And you know, it wasn't necessarily an intelligence problem, at least for Julie it wasn't. Maybe for me it was. But, you know, for her, it's like she knew how to handle money. It wasn't a competency issue. You know what it was? You know why we kept staying in that same place? It was a pride problem. It was a pride issue. One of the hardest calls I ever made was calling a financial counselor and saying, man, I have got myself in a mess. We're hurting financially. We're tens of thousands of dollars in revolving debt that's just accumulated over time. And we didn't ever see that there was a hope that could get better until we called someone outside of ourselves to come in and help us. And I tell you what, that was 7 years ago. Next month, we made that call. It took us 3.5 years, 42 months to pay over $44,000 of debt down. And then we were financially free. We got all that debt paid down. And I tell you what, and the blessings just keep coming. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we gave more of our resources away last year than we've ever given away in our lifetime. And that's just because God, and I'm not, this isn't like, do the right thing, God bless you. This is, we got help from the outside, and we are able to do things now that we thought were impossible. And I don't say that pridefully, I say that very, very humbly. I'm just telling you, if you want to get to a place that doesn't seem possible, you got to get help from the outside. Whether it's your finances, whether it's a marriage situation, and you're thinking, man, we need to see a counselor. I was talking to somebody this week, and they're like, yeah, you know, call on a counselor. I don't want anybody to see me at the counselor. I don't want anybody to see me walking in. Well, at some point, you got to decide if your pride is getting in the way of actually getting to a new place. I mean, is it possible that pride is actually the thing that's preventing me from being able to experience what I think right now currently isn't possible? Maybe it's getting in a group. I mean, all our groups are kicking off, you know, next week. And I tell you what, you know, here's why we talk about groups so much. Whenever I hear somebody say, oh, I'm in this group or that group, you know, in my mind I go, interesting. That's somebody right there that's going somewhere. I don't care where they are on the spiritual spectrum. That's somebody who's going someplace. Because when you're in a group, you're saying, I need other people in my life, and I need to be needed by other people in my life. And guess what? You're going to get knocked down. You will get knocked down. It may not happen this week or this month. You will get knocked down, and you don't have everything you need. We need people around us to help us get to places that we can't get to on our own. Last thing. Pride knocks us down, humility lifts us up. Pride knocks us down, but humility lifts us up. Jesus actually talked about this in Luke. He said, for everyone who exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. That's what Jesus is saying, is if you want to lift yourself up with pride, what he's saying right here is, you know what, God's going to smack you down. You may not think of God as a smackdown kind of guy, but he's like, hey, if you think you're going to make yourself higher than you ought to be, guess what, I'm going to put you down a notch. I'm going to humble you. That's what it means to be humbled. It means to be put down, to be put down. I was at Kroger about a week and a half ago after I stopped by there on the way home from work one afternoon, And I was just walking in the front door, I was in the apple section, and I saw somebody from Crosspoint. They came up to me, and I saw them kind of beeline around the produce to me, which is always in my mind. I go, oh no, is this going to be good or is this going to be bad? You know, and so I'm, you know, we exchange pleasantries, and And she says to me, she says, Kurt, you know, I came over because I have to take issue with something you said last weekend. I'm like, oh, okay, you know, smiling, yeah. And you know, and she's like, you know, I talked to my husband, and you know, you there was something you said, and you basically said, you know, I'm not that great of a teacher. I'm like, oh, okay. And she said, you know, my husband, and basically I was talking about how the grace of God is on some people, and then on other people it's on them way more. So you can have a gift of teaching, but then some people really have the gift of teaching, and they're just powerful in what they do. And I said, yeah, I don't have that much of a gift. I mean, I think God's grace is on me a little bit. And she said, we disagree. We disagree. We think, you know, she started listing off all these people. That she's like, we think you could stand up with these people and hold your weight. I'm like, I steal stuff from those people. I mean, I borrow. I listen to them. I don't think they're listening to me trying to get insight. They're way smarter than me. I mean, I'm not very smart. All right, what you get on Sunday is like my best learnings from all these pillars, you know. And so we had a really interesting thing. And then I'm like, oh, gosh, I'm prideful now. So I got to maybe put back down. I need to humble myself. All I'm saying is Jesus says, if you want to be humble, If you want to be able to be resilient, you got to lower yourself. He's not saying, oh, you know, think, oh, woe is me. I don't have any self-esteem. I'm a loser. He's not saying that. He's just saying have a proper understanding of your role in the cosmos. He's like, if you want to walk around up there like I'm all that, and man, God, I'm more important than everybody else, and God will smack you down. He will humble you. He will put you down. All right, you know, that, he's like, that's somebody I'm going to hit. And it may not be this week, may not be next week, may not be this month or even this year, may not even be this decade or even in this lifetime. But he says here, take your proper place under God and you will be exalted. And Joseph gets exalted because he learns humility. And as we're going to see next week, he gets elevated to the second highest position in the entire kingdom. The entire kingdom. Now, I don't know where this lands. I'm confident it lands in a different place for every single one of us this morning. Now, I want us to walk out a few applications. So take out your connection card. There's some next steps on the back. And, you know, maybe for you, one of these is, you know, I need to identify where I need to begin a posture of humility. Maybe you've got pride in your life. You need to ask yourself, is pride actually getting in the way of me getting to what seems impossible right now? And you may not even know it. In fact, if you don't know it, here's how you can find out, all right? If you came with somebody this morning, when you get in the car this you know, after service or this afternoon, you know, it's your spouse or partner or kids or whatever, just say, hey, do I have pride in my life? They'll tell you, all right? You open up the conversation, they'll tell you exactly where that is, all right? Do I have pride that's getting in the way? And see, this isn't just a Joseph thing. This is like a character of God thing. We see this all across Scripture. Look at Ephesians 6:13. It says, take up the whole armor of God, that you may be able to withstand in the evil day, and having done all, to stand firm. What does God give us right here? What does it say God gives us? He gives us armor. Why does he give us armor? Because he knows we're going to get hit. He knows we're going to get knocked down. What does he say? He says, stand firm. Stand firm. There may be something going on in your life right now that you're ready to run from. What's God say right here? He says, stand firm. There may be some problem that you're dealing with this week, and you're like, man, I'm getting as far away as possible, but you need to stand firm. Maybe your next step is creating some endurance in the difficult and not turning and running. Maybe that's your next step this week. Here's another one in Galatians 6:9. It says, and let us not grow weary of doing good, for in due season we will reap if we do not give up. See, reaping means I actually put something into the ground, and right now it's in the ground, and eventually it's going to grow up, and it's going to create a crop, and there's going to be fruit that I'm going to reap into my life. What he's saying right here is don't give up on doing good. Don't give up. See, some of you might be in school right now. And you might be thinking, man, I'm not a school person. I hate school. I don't get what we're studying. I don't have time for school in my life. I just can't handle it. Listen, it's well documented that the more education you have, the better off in life you're going to be. Don't give up. Go to class this week, all right? Get there. Don't give up. If you're a parent and you're going, man, Kurt, I'm so tired. I just don't know if I can keep doing it. I get it. Julie and I, we were out at dinner recently, and we were out, just the two of us, and there was a family with four kids that walked in, and she's like, look at that family. They have four kids. They have so many kids. I don't know how they do it. I said, Julie, We have four kids. She's like, I know. It looks so hard. That's why we're tired all the time. Listen, don't give up. Or maybe you're down to your last child at home. And everybody else is out. And you're like, man, I've been through this routine so much. I'm just so tired. And you're starting to bail on parenting your youngest. Don't give up on them. Don't give up. I mean, one of my commitments personally, to share this with Julie, to my kids, is I want to parent my youngest, who's 7 right now, with the same intensity for her whole years that she's with us like I did our oldest when she was the only one with us. I want to be that kind of not giving up. Man, don't give up. Your kids need your leadership. I don't, well, maybe something else in your life you're ready to give up on. You just need to say, you know what? I'm not going to give up. Maybe it's getting in a groove, volunteering. Maybe there's somebody that you need to not give up on that you've been trying to bring closer to God. Invite them to game day. Get them here in 2 weekends. Maybe it'll be a phenomenal weekend for you to bring them. Let's get in the right posture, and have a massive 2017. We pray for us. Heavenly Father, I just thank you for giving us this example of Joseph. For the other dozens of examples in the Bible that we see of people who have been knocked down and they get back up. God, I thank you for the people in our lives who've modeled this for us, who've helped us see what it looks like to get knocked down, to get up, to never give up. And God, I just pray that you would help us to know what to do with what we've heard today. I pray that you just do your thing and help us to make the application so we can stay after it. We can stay after it this year in your name. All right, let's stand, and we're gonna get after it here. We're gonna sing a song about not holding anything back before we get out of here.